This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. I use it with my patients at the Hoffman Center all the time. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company is offering you special savings of $50 and free shipping. To find out more, go to TryZonaNow.com or call toll-free 1-866-669-9662. Be sure to mention Dr. Hoffman to get your $50 savings and free shipping. That's 1-866-669-9662 or tryzonanow.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to talk to a naturopath who's written a great book. It's called The Little Book of Healthy Beauty. It's about simple daily habits to get you glowing, and yeah, there's more to it than just going to the ground floor department store and buying some expensive esoteric placental extract. Yeah, those may have some value, but that's just a superficial way of addressing external beauty. And so today we're going to talk to Dr. Pina Lo-Giudice, who's a naturopathic physician. She's also a licensed acupuncturist. She's a good colleague of mine here in New York City, who, along with her husband and partner, Dr. Peter Bongiorno, has an excellent naturopathic clinic, Inner Source Health. And she has a very distinguished career. She was trained at Bastyr College of Naturopathic Medicine. She's taught at New York University, Mount Sinai School of Medicine. She's on the adjunct faculty at the Natural Gourmet Institute for Food and Health. And most importantly, in addition to her ND credentials, she has a BDO credential, which is, do you know what that is, Pina? That stands for Been on Dr. Oz. Okay.
Okay. I've never heard that.
That's a very important credential because she's a very eloquent spokesperson for natural approaches to health, and she's actually a frequent guest on the Dr. Oz show, which I think is quite a distinction. Without further ado, here's our guest. And Pina, what got you to write this book? It's an excellent, compact little book, and I think it's going to do a lot of good. It's getting the word out about natural medicine.
Great. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's a real honor. What motivated me to write the book is that, you know, one of being in New York, which is, you know, is an unlicensed state for naturopathic medicine, I really wanted to write something that every person can pick up around the country, whether they have access to a naturopathic doctor or not, so that everyone can get the information about what naturopaths preach about health and wellness, about what are the basic tenets that we've learned about that, you know, enhances our vitality. So I really wanted to write a very accessible, user-friendly guide that people can refer to over and over about the basic philosophies of natural medicine.
Yeah, and what's interesting about your background is that, you know, well, a lot of people think, okay, you know, naturopathic medicine, that's herbs, that's, various types of, just alternative applications. You actually come from a very straight science background. I understand that you worked at the National Institutes of Health before you embarked on a naturopathic career. Can you tell us about your science background?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was in college, I was pre-med, and I thought I wanted to go to conventional medical school. And so I was, you know, pre-med through college, very science-based, and then I received this pre-doctorate fellowship to work at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, which is the world's largest research institute. And at that NIH, I worked in the Institute of Mental Health, where we study the HPA axis, which is the hypothalamus, pituitary, adrenal. So basically that whole stress mechanism. Mm-hmm. So I did research there. And so in my heart, I always felt like, you know, even though because it was my own health journey that brought me to naturopathic medicine, that, you know, having practitioners out there that can bridge the world of conventional and natural soap, because I think that's, you know, what's needed in this day and age. It's really been a thrill of mine to be able to write this book and talk about it, you know, nationally. So, but yeah, I love looking at research. I love having the science-based information, and I love applying it, you know, in the natural medicine world.
Actually, one of your areas of expertise was in the field of the study of leptin. Leptin, so important now in our understanding of, you know, why people gain weight and or sometimes have difficulty losing it.
Right. You know, leptin is very interesting. You know, I graduated college, and I'm like, okay, what am I getting myself into? and what am I studying? But, you know, it's really fun that now when many patients come in and, you know, they've tried numerous diets and they can't figure out, you know, they've starved themselves, they've even tried to exercise a certain way, and the weight doesn't come off, but, you know, not realizing there is this obesity hormone or, you know, fat hormone called leptin that, you know, that actually once you look at someone's blood values and what they are and you change certain a person's diet accordingly, people do amazingly well. So it's really nice to be able to, you know, old educational information to my current practice. And I always say, you know, no education goes unwasted.
Indeed. So you bring forward that science background to study of, you know, maybe less high-tech interventions. But tell us about naturopathic school, because I think some people have the conception that naturopaths basically, you know, maybe they take a quick course and hang out a shingle and prescribe herbs or do, you know, manipulation or acupuncture. And, you know, it's not quite like being a doctor. It's not so rigorous. But actually, these days, naturopathic training is very scientific and very rigorous, and there's a growing community of naturopaths who are highly trained, many of whom, like you, originally wanted to go to med school, but decided maybe with a sense of idealism that they wanted to pursue a more natural approach to healing.
Right. No, I mean, definitely, my husband and I have many students that come in, and exactly that, they have the idea, like, I'm really into, like, aromatherapy and herbs, and so I want to become a naturopath. And I'm like, oh no, unless you want to become a physician, you know, maybe naturopathic medical school is not for you. And so how our schooling works, it's the same basic sciences as in the MD or DO program in terms of taking anatomy, physiology, pharmacology. You do have to pass basic board examinations after those initial years, and then there's a follow-up board examination at the end of your four-year education. So, you know, besides learning everything that you would learn in conventional medicine, you know, because you do need to learn pharmacology, you need to learn about drug-herb interactions, you need to learn about basic biochemistry and so on. So you are learning all these classes, plus the natural healing modalities of botanical medicine or homeopathy, or you know, we do a lot of counseling work. So there's so many other areas. So it is a lot of work. And then once you pass your examination at the end of the 4 years, again, then you could have that license. But it's, you know, it's definitely becoming more intense. It's becoming more, you know, as more and more research is out there on science-based natural therapies or in various nutraceuticals. You know, there's a lot to learn, so it's definitely more than just studying, you know, flowers and plants.
Exactly. So, you know, in reading your book, it's called The Little Book of Healthy Beauty, it strikes me that it's interesting that as I go through the book, I get about two-thirds of the way through it until I finally reach a section which talks about specific vitamins and nutraceuticals that help the skin, the hair, you know, the physical appearance. And I think that that's deliberately on your part, because I guess you want to front load the book with an emphasis on that it's not just about popping a pill, you know, like some magical, you know, age reversing supplement, that really the components of beauty are very fundamental to lifestyle.
100%. I mean, that's the whole idea, because, you know, it was kind of my master disguise of, you know, talking, you know, most people are obviously externally focused on their beauty and what they look like, but really it's, you know, it all comes from the inside out. So the whole idea is that I wrote about what are the things that really do make us feel the feel the best, you know, get that sense of vitality and get that glow out. And it is about, it's about what you eat, it's about how you sleep, it's how you detox and how you exercise. And it really, and the last thing is, like you said, it's the last thing on my list is what supplement you take or what topical, you know, like $200 cream that you're applying on your skin. It's really, those are the last things that I will always talk about, because in essence, it's exactly that. It's a supplement to doing all these other things. And there's no way a topical cream or a supplement, you know, can reverse, you know, not sleeping or not exercising or having, you know, a highly processed diet. So it's crucial for longevity, health, and wellness to look at these basic tenets so that you can actually look your best.
And we'll get to specific supplements because, you know, I want to provide our listeners with news they can use. And there's always, it's always intriguing to hear our experts' opinions on which supplements take precedence in terms of whatever health problem we're addressing. And here we're addressing anti-aging, and skin and hair, and nails and, you know, all the accoutrements of, that glow that people want to achieve. But, give us a little bit of a grounding in skin science. What are some of the components that make skin age, and how can we fend them off?
Well, I mean, again, the basic areas, and I kind of bullet point through each one, is that insomnia, lack of sleep will absolutely make the skin age. A food, a dietary program that's very high in processed foods, foods that are what's called that highly aged themselves, mm-hmm. which means foods that create these advanced glycated end products. So when you cook foods a certain way, so it's not even just about what you eat, it's how you're cooking your food, and that if you cook food that's super high heat, even that creates these compounds called ages that will literally age your skin. And then you have issues of lack of exercise that can cause the skin to sag and decrease the collagen elasticity, lack of detoxification, because if you don't detoxify, you're going to get an accumulation of toxins in the skin, which can then cause age spots and so on. So really there's, like, again, all these basic areas that, you know, if you look at them even one, like just one area, it may not seem like a lot, but, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, we have to deal with all these issues as human beings on a daily basis. So it is looking at, okay, where am I the weakest, and do I need to detoxify more, or do I need to exercise more, or do I need to have more of a Mediterranean-style diet? Because then once you're able to work on those things, I mean, again, there's plenty of research that shows that when you work on these things in these various areas, the skin will look better. I mean, there was this one study about skin stiffening that they actually studied the skin on people's buttocks, and it's very funny, or at least
it's where the sun don't shine, but I guess it's a reflection of overall skin quality.
Right. So they wanted to find an area of skin where, like, they could rule out sun damage.
Right.
They figure, okay, you know, so if it's on your face, it's obviously exposed to the sun constantly. So they wanted to study an area that really it's just always covered. So they had these volunteers, and they studied the skin of on their buttocks, on the derriere, and what it showed that after comparing the people who didn't exercise versus people who did exercise, and they studied the skin, that the people who exercised, their skin didn't stiffen and sag and age as those who exercised.
And why might that be? What's the theory there? Does it have something to do with blood perfusion, circulation, certain helpful chemicals that are generated by exercise, counteracting inflammation?
Definitely the increase of the blood perfusion and the removing of the toxins through the exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I'm glad you mentioned ages, because it's kind of a play on words. Ages age you, advanced glycation end products. Actually wrote a recent article for our newsletter on the subject of ages. And, you know, in keeping with grilling season, because a lot of people are accelerating their aging by consuming a lot of ages, you know, things that are toasted or grilled. The heat creates cross links in the proteins, and those are the advanced glycation end products that actually you can consume. The more you consume, the more you build those up in your body, in your skin, not just your skin. Your skin reflects what's happening in your internal organs. So, skin is a fundamental barometer of what's happening in your heart, your brain, your eyes, all your internal organs. What is skin cross-linking? Can you explain that process and, you know, talk about some ways to avert it?
So what you can do to avoid that, so glycation and cross-linking is like an extrinsic form of aging. It's due to a lot of environmental factors such as your diet and lifestyle, so not our genes. You know, again, many times people think, oh, well, this is what my mother looks like, or this is my father looks like, this is my genetics. But the fact of the matter is that our skin aging has a lot to do with these outside factors that we have complete control of, like I said, like diet and lifestyle. So glycation, so this cross-linking that you could slow down by, well, let me explain cross-linking. So cross-linking is when links a protein, sugar, and a lipid happen together. Does that make sense?
Yes. I mean, so it's in effect, it's like what happens when you cook meat. You know, you put sugar on the surface of, say, a roast that you're grilling, and that gives it a nice glaze, but the sugar mixes with the protein and the fat, and then it creates a damage. It tastes good, but it doesn't look good if it's on the surface of your skin.
Like, harder sheen on the meat, yeah. That's what happens with our skin. It becomes hard and stiff. And so it obstructs like nutrient and waste transfer in the skin so that damaged collagen shows up as wrinkles and sagging or discoloration.
Mm-hmm. And a good example, Pina, is you can actually, I sometimes do a little facial diagnosis. You ride the subways in New York sometimes and, you know, you're sitting across from somebody, you're a little bored and, you know, you look at the people, the faces of the people, and you can almost discern which people are smokers because they have those little wrinkles around their mouth. And, some of that's from just the physical, you know, puffing on cigarettes, but actually it has to do with free radicals causing cross-linking, which causes the skin to pucker and wrinkle.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it's kind of interesting. Like when you see people on the subways or wherever, it's like a lot of times you almost even know what's, like, I mean, I know as a practicing doctor, is like sometimes someone could just sit down and I kind of know what's going on just by, you know, by looking at them before they're like even saying, okay, this is my health complaint.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of diet, you know, it sounds like there are some good things to accentuate and then there's some bad things to avoid. So can you enumerate what those might be in terms of preventing skin cross-linking and the protein damage that leads to wrinkles?
Right. So, I mean, in terms of the good things that we can do, I mean, there's things that, you know, many times that we've heard of. I mean, the first thing is about eating mindfully, you know, slowly chewing your food so your body can digest and break down the food appropriately, avoiding coffee and alcohol and dairy products. Those things themselves can also, you know, contribute to ages. And again, how, you know, eating foods that are very, not eating foods that are, you know, cooked with high heat or fried, again, can contribute to these ages. So you really want to maintain more of a Mediterranean style diet. There's, again, so much research on the blue zones, which are the areas of the world that people live the longest. And when you just look at what they eat in terms of their Mediterranean-based diet, you know, it's so wonderful. It's lean meats. It's simple carbohydrates. It's not consuming a lot of sugar and white flour. So really, when you have a diet that's pretty simple and not so complicated with a lot of green vegetables and healthy fats, people feel better and live longer. So it's unfortunately when we're consuming things like alcohol or highly processed or high heat cooked food, this is when you're going to get, you know, that negative consequence of the cross-linking in the ages.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you can actually, sometimes people who drink too much, you can actually see the flush or the, you know, the skin irritation that sometimes occurs with excessive alcohol consumption. So in terms of, you know, fresh fruits and vegetables, I guess the rationale is, and spices, they contain substances which are antioxidants that can somewhat counteract the aging process, and that's a play on words, AGE, meaning advanced glycation end products.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. I mean, if you even look at a blueberry, and you have this beautiful little berry that everyone knows that's a very high in antioxidant, but, you know, when you think about the component of why the blueberry can survive in such high heat in the sun, it's that the blueberry's got to create these compounds to protect itself, to protect that inner seed. And so when you're eating food, your body is going to get those same protective compounds. And many people don't realize that food is information to our body. It's like food is that little, you know, computer chip that will turn genes on or turn negative genes off. So really, you know, food is this information. It's very empowering. And I think if people can really understand that, you know what, they have complete control of how they feel and, you know, what their digestion does and with the foods that they eat. You know, it's really quite amazing. You know, I know for me, when I first learned about it, because I grew up with tons of digestive issues, and when I really made that connection, I'm like, you know what, I'm actually, you know, honoring my body, giving it great information by eating organic and clean. You know, it was life-changing for me.
Oh, absolutely. Okay, well, you've set the stage for a discussion of specific supplements that could be part of your anti-aging beauty program. The book is The Little Book of Healthy Beauty, Pina Logidice. I stumble a little bit over your name, is our guest. She's a naturopathic physician and also a frequent contributor to the Dr. Oz show. And that's one of the reasons is that she articulates complex subjects in a way that's easily accessible. And that's what this book is designed to do. In part two, stay with us because we're going to focus on specific supplements, nutraceuticals that may help you preserve healthy hair, skin, and nails, and contribute to your overall glow. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.